Welcome to Pod of Orcas. I'm Justin Cox with the Sea Doc Society. What you're going to hear next is part two of an interview with Ellen Kelsey, author of the book Hope Matters, Why Changing the Way We Think is Critical to Solving the Environmental Crisis. In part one of this conversation, which is available in this same feed, we talk about the importance of hope, not only as something supported by real news stories happening in the world right now, but also as something that can beget action and momentum. I also find a way to lose myself in a little bit of a baseball analogy. In part two, we start with the issue of southern resident killer whales. After that, we get into the roles of individual people versus corporations and governments as it relates to conservation and what think global, act local means in the current climate, which I think is a pun, actually. Kind of on that note, I want to tell you about an upcoming Sea Doc Society event called Home. And by home, I mean the planet, the Salish Sea, and wherever you are, sitting down or doing your dishes right now. This is going to be a virtual event that'll be held on Zoom. And if you enjoy this podcast, I can assure you that you're going to love it. We created our first one of these events kind of in response to the pandemic, the way everybody did. But last year, we took it a lot deeper and quite literally went from the bottom of the seafloor all the way up to the surface. And this year's event is going to be even better. It'll be held on September 15th at 5:30 p.m., and we've been having a blast putting it together. You can register at seadocsociety.org/event, and we'll send you a confirmation link that'll work that night. There is also a link to that registration page in the show description of this episode. And now to my conversation with Ellen Kelsey. At the end of part one, I asked, what are your conversations about southern resident killer whales? How do you speak about them? And part two picks up not only with killer whale conservation, but whale conservation and global recovery efforts in general. You can find the Sea Doc Society on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and you can get our monthly update with no spam at seadocsociety.org/newsletter. It's very easy to sign up. We dedicated the final week of July to posting all about seabirds, and props to Madison on the work she did on that. Go hit up the Sea Doc Society Instagram page if you love seabirds as much as we do. And here is my conversation with Ellen Kelsey.
Australia has talked about that they've reached peak whale, which I really love that idea rather than peak oil, you know. Yeah. So that's a kind of a fun idea. But in fact, Biggs killer whales, as you know, are also recovering in the Salish Sea. So the meat-eating killer whales are doing better, and the residents are not doing better. And I think that we can talk about why might that be the case, and then what are people doing about that? You know, what is happening around salmon enhancement? What is happening around looking at habitat protection? What is going on? You know, this maps of where killer whales go, even more clearly defining the conflict between killer whales and shipping traffic and those kinds of things. So I think it's very coherent that to talk about these things are going in a better direction. What do we know is helping that better direction? And which things are really concerning to us? What are people doing to move it in a better direction? And at the same time, right now, it's really, really worrisome. But yeah, these actions are also happening. People are doing these things. We see, I think it's 137 countries right now have some bans or legislation or tariffs around plastic, single-use plastic. And that is an issue. That's one of the issues on the Salish Sea, land-based sources of marine degradation. You know, yeah. So again, not to make it sound as if no one is doing anything about resident killer whales. People are very concerned about them, and that's a good thing. And so how do we help to support those kinds of actions?
Yeah. It's like, rather than just, hey, there are only 70 of these left. If you don't do something, they're going to be gone. It's like, there are only 70 of these left, but this species that shares this territory is doing well, or this species that is up in Alaska and also eats salmon is doing fine. Humpbacks mm-hmm. have recovered in this way. And also these people are doing this work in the Salish Sea to help with salmon. Yeah. It's like, look to the things that you can follow forward.
Exactly. And build off those things that are moving in a better direction, you know, and to talk about that, like the priority of that. I just think that's because that's also truthful. You know, it's not that no one is doing anything or that nobody cares, which is what can be implied if one says there's only this many, you've got to do something. And I think I've really used to spend time, it's funny, as a judge at children's science fairs. And I encountered so many young children who believe that they are the first one to find out about this issue, and it is on them, you know? And I think it's kind of morally indefensible to put children in that position. I think we need to say, I am so glad you love this thing, and that I can understand you're really worried about it because you love it. And there are some real problems, that's for sure. And I think it's helpful perhaps to know that there are also these people doing these things and these people doing these things. And here in this place, this is going better. And here in this place, it's still a worry and these people are working hard on this. You know, to me, that feels how I would talk to a child about anything, that in a truthful way. You know, this is a real concern. And I think what's happening to us a little bit, there's a recent research from UBC, for example, with the Canadian Mental Health Association, saying our fears about the pandemic and climate change, you know, they all get commingled. And then people have comments about, you know, the world is heading in a terrible direction. And children hear that, of course. And I think it's really important, again, I find myself to be a little impatient with those comments, because I'm like, well, let's look specifically, you know, like, where are things really worrying us and what's happening there? And where are things going in a really quite a good direction? And how do we amplify that and talk about it in a much more informed, current way? To me, that's where we want to be.
Yeah, Ellen, I've thought about that a lot over these last couple of weeks, from climate to, like you said, pandemic related news to now we have a school shooting in Texas. Like, you have, there are a lot of things right now, political polarization, and there are a lot of things right now that seem straight up unsolvable. I guess because if you just place yourself right in the middle of the storm of what's happening now and just look around, you don't see the path out of it. You don't with this specific one, if you don't know, it all seems just kind of bad. And so it was like, I think that's like why it's so valuable to look at these examples of like, well, hey, look, go back 40 years. This looked that way too, and it's not that way now. You know, I think you gave an example, an extremely powerful example of someone who was diagnosed, who had HIV in the 80s, and it basically basically accepted death, right? Lived for a period of time as if I am going to die. And then in that moment, that person doesn't know what solutions or not, what life enhancing solutions are going to enable that person to live, right? Maybe I'll let you expand on that, but like, felt like a very good analogy of like,
yeah, thank you for raising that one. It's because it's challenging this idea of fatalism. Mm-hmm. And fatalism is very rampant right now. We talk in a fatalistic way, as if this is a predetermined foregone conclusion. And the example you're giving is of a man who had AIDS, and at the time that he was diagnosed, it was very high mortality rate. And so he described that he did not invest in a career. He did not purchase a home. He did not do any of the things a person might do who's looking forward to their future. And then he didn't die. Yeah. And then, you know, and so he was talking about what that's like when you don't die, when you're, I'm not laughing. I don't mean it as a laughing. No. I'm just meaning it as a, like, the incredulity one must feel if you are in a fatalistic narrative that doesn't turn out the way you thought. Yeah. And so he was using that as an example of, you know, now AIDS is a completely different health diagnosis, and people can live very healthy lives with that diagnosis. So he was talking about those kinds of changes. And when we look at something that is so horrific, and we look at the implications of that, and we see in the case of this school shooting, which is so horrible, I think we need the space to share our feelings about that. It can make us feel overwhelmed and unable to process or to imagine something good is occurring anywhere, you know, at that moment. And I think it's important to know that if you look statistically, that's a very unusual country compared to gun ownership in most countries. You know, so again, it's really important to know, am I looking at a big trend that is happening everywhere, which is how it feels? The media, it's very fascinating. They even talk about media eclipses. So we've just come through a media eclipse of COVID, which means we mostly heard about COVID and almost nothing else. And that had led a lot of people to think, for example, that interest in climate change had dropped off because you didn't hear about it in the media. But it's not true. It's you know, in fact, research shows that interest in climate change stayed high and in many cases went higher during COVID. So we have to be very careful not to mix what we learn from the media as being the truth of what is going on, the only truth. And I think that's where solutions journalism really matters, to looking at a broader range. And, you know, I like to say to kids, in 2019, those climate marches, which were massive and youth-led, we heard a lot about them.
Yep.
And then we've heard nothing since. But now 1 in 8 people on Earth lives in a place that has declared a climate emergency. And last year, if I was talking to you, it was 1 in 10 people on Earth. So now it's 1 in 8, you know, and those climate emergencies bring with them a requirement for specific plans to deal with the climate emergency. They have all of these ripple on effects. So again, I think the not knowing can lead to this generalizing that then makes it feel like we are doomed. We're in this place. Yeah. And I just really am, as I said, impatient for the specificity that allows us to look at, yes, we have that really important feeling, 100%. And let's now look at, you know, I was looking, okay, then what are the solutions for gun violence? Where do they exist? And in fact, the Solutions Journalism Network did a whole conference on solutions to school shootings, of which there are many, and many which have been put into effect to very good outcomes. And so that is where I want to put my energy, is in moving these things that need to move in the directions we know can work. That's where I come down.
I think that idea of a climate emergency being declared as a good thing, you get into this late in the book, like it kind of illustrates the whole, like this whole idea of hope, which is like climate emergency, that alone doesn't sound hopeful, but what that is an acknowledgement of what is really there. And it comes with actual tangible hope, like reasons to be hopeful, right? And I think that's like a really good distilled down like idea of be hopeful, but with like purpose and tangible progress and everything. Something I want to make sure to ask you about, because I'd say that like in like go back 10 years maybe.
Yeah.
There was a lot of conversations about like individual people recycling, not using straws, things like that. And that all still exists, but it seems to me, you talk a little bit about this, but I've kind of felt it in the last 5, 6, 7 years, not sure, but kind of like, some of that stuff was straight up marketing on the part of like larger institutions to put the burden of responsibility on individual people. But at the same time, it's still good action, you know, it's still good things to do. But you, a good way you put this is, it's not either or, it's not you doing something or institutions and corporations doing something. It's both. And can you unpack that some more?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you, Justin. I really am enjoying this because it's very much true. That's how I'm
enjoying it too. I can't tell you, like, I was like, I would read like 3 paragraphs of the book and write down another question each time and had to just stop myself and just read.
Oh, so kind of you. That's really kind of you. Well, there's a lot in there. So one is this idea, it was being positioned as an either or, you're being manipulated if you do this individual action. But again, as I was saying earlier, like the whole movement toward plant-based eating, which is having a very big global impact, came as a result of individual people choosing to eat more plants, you know, in their world. And that's now created, it's the largest growing segment of food. So that's a big deal. And how we move around, our transportation decisions, you know, demands for public transit, which have been increasing all the time, the giant interest in cycling, which is continuing to mount on a regular basis, the demands for electrification of vehicles. I think it's now Norway, it's over 70% of cars are now electrified. It's really amazing. So anyway, these kinds of movements make a difference. And holding corporations accountable makes a big difference. And we're seeing quite a lot now in the legal frameworks around this, really sort of challenging from a legal standpoint and holding corporations accountable in that way. And then there was just 2 months ago, I believe, or last month, a new UN body that's actually being chaired by Catherine McKenna, who was the Minister of Environment at one point in Canada. She's the chair. to look in an investigative way at the pledges corporations are making around climate and to essentially check for greenwashing. And I think that's really an important thing because our skepticism and distrust is needs to have evidence in order to be able to trust. And so, again, I see movement going on in both of these areas that's really quite important. And I guess one of the other things is this idea of hope punk. So hope punk comes from, it kind of emerged in the literature world of things, but it's the idea that, you know, the narratives we choose to live in matter to us. I talk about a gloom and doom narrative really, in, you know, holding us back. But some of the major narratives I'd say that have influenced us are, one is noble bright, that, you know, somebody wonderful will come along and save us. And so I think for a while in environmental communication, we used to point out environmental heroes almost like in that noble bright way. And then there's grim dark, which is the dystopian doom and gloom, which I would say is dominant. And now there's hope punk, and hope punk says, I'm going to behave this way. I personally am not going to use straws, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Even if it made no difference, I'm going to do it because I know that's a better thing to do. And I'm going to conduct my life in ways that are in line with the values I believe are good. And so a lot of people, I would say, have found their way to hope punk when they couldn't quite feel hopeful. And it's sort of saying, okay, I may not be able to agree with you that some things are going in a better direction. I just don't feel it at this moment, but I can really get on side with, I'm going to still behave the way I really want to be in the world.
Yeah.
And I think that's important that, I think I really believe in hope punk, and I am genuinely hopeful, but I understand that that might be a really important way of coming into this.
I think it offloads a lot of like big grand, like big baggage. It's just like, my life is better if I do this. Right. And so ideally that grows to other people. And ideally that like has some kind of infectious, maybe that's doing more, but whatever, I'm doing it anyway. You know.
Exactly. And I'm glad you said infectious, because I think it's quite useful to remember that emotions are contagious.
Pod of Orcas is created by the Sea Doc Society, a nonprofit based on Orcas Island in the Salish Sea. Our science-based conservation work is made possible by donors like you, and that includes the creation of this here podcast. If you'd like to support our work, you can go to seadocsociety.org/donate and make a one-time or recurring monthly donation. There is a link in the show notes of this episode.
They're contagious face-to-face and they're contagious online. And I think one thing that I really try and encourage people to do is to think about, you know, when you really care about something and you're worried and you spread only, you know, the problems of that thing, you're actually spreading a contagious discouragement. That's not your intention, but that's what can end up happening. And so to really think about, okay, if I really want to engage my friends in this thing, how do I help that by coming from a solutions orientation?
Awesome. All right. Well, shortly, I want to let you go. I want to ask real quick, just because it came up for me and I was trying to slot it into like, it was seen by a lot of people and I couldn't decide where it landed in all of this, but did you watch Don't Look Up, and did you have any thoughts about it?
No, you know, I haven't seen it. Can you give me a quick paraphrase?
It's tough because it's satirical, but it's sort of like we're in a urgent climate situation. I mean, they're treating it like, instead of climate change, it's an asteroid coming to Earth and it's certain like death. And it's kind of like the political and media and individual response to this thing coming is it's a joke. It's terrible, you know, but it's echoing basically the human, like our response to climate change is kind of what it's trying to hold up. It's inherently pretty sad and negative, but also funny, but also I can't decide. I mean, it's hard because it's satire. And so it being satire, if it looks like a bunch of, I found it affecting, but I guess not affecting in a way that made me necessarily do anything, but it did like hold a mirror on the bad things, which there's value in that, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I wish I suppose I should see it. I was thinking about, I don't know if this is relevant or not, but I was working on a small animated film that was commissioned by Mark Silver, a filmmaker, and he was a fellow at Amnesty International. So that was the background. And they wanted to do a post-COVID film, just a 3-minute short. But of course, we're not in post-COVID, so that was not possible, you know. And so Mark had been going to these listening stations with Amnesty International. They're all regional offices, so, you know, Central American office or the India and Nepal office, like these different regions, and really talking to people about sort of their COVID experiences, these Amnesty International leaders. And what was really interesting to me is that we saw both kind of the worst sides of things, you know, really shone a spotlight, just as you're saying, at these sort of the intersectional problems of racism and poverty and inequity and all of these things. And also right up there were all these examples of community coming together and people's generosity and you know, people creating all kinds of systems that were really effective, you know. And so what we ended up doing in our film was sort of showing both of these sides, you know, and I don't think it's an either or. I don't even want, I don't want that polarity, but not in sort of a, like, it's all really that, but here's a little good thing. Like really in those listening sessions, both things were coming up quite fulsomely. And I think that that is perhaps our, you know, our challenge of life is that absolutely we have these critical, massive systemic issues. Absolutely. And absolutely we also have these extraordinary things that are happening on massive scales that are moving us in the directions we want to amplify. So both things are true.
Absolutely.
And I don't know how that film came out, but I would.
It's worth a look. I'd be curious what you're talking about.
So
It's more if you're satirizing something, you're not there to like prescribe the hopeful thing necessarily. You're there to just reflect. It's essentially critique, right? So that there's something kind of, I don't know. It would be an interesting one. But all right, I want to let you go on. We're thinking about climate change and the planet, and you have, there's this book gets down to like specific stories and everything like that, but this is a little bit selfish, but as a person working for a marine science organization in a special ecosystem in the Pacific Northwest, with larger challenges that go even beyond that, what's the kind of like, I guess I'm talking about like the think global, act local, but what's the sort of like, how do you message people in a individual ecosystem to protect that ecosystem when that ecosystem is part of a larger thing with all of its considerations? I guess I'm not asking you to have a prescriptive answer to that, but I'll take any thoughts you have.
Yeah, no, well, I think it's, and I know that your organization and many in the Salish Sea are doing a tremendous job of helping us to know we live on the Salish Sea, that we are part of it. I'm only breathing because of the Salish Sea. I love that. You know, to really sort of situate us in that place and that it is such a special inland sea, you know, that it is a remarkable place on the planet for biodiversity as an inland sea. And I think, I guess the thing I would just keep saying is to stay current, stay specific, stay, you know, so what's going on this week in the Salish Sea? I was lucky enough to be kayaking in the Salish Sea on the weekend and to see the recovery of you know, sea stars. It's exciting to see that, because I know when we were talking about sea star wasting, which is still a massive concern and important to think about, but a lot of people were talking about that now they're gone, you know? So I really love to talk about, and here they are, you know, and not that they're fully recovered and we don't have to worry, but just that things are always changing in ways that we may dream of, but didn't know would happen or, you know, are emerging. And that's because of good work people are doing and because of the complexity of the planet. And so I would say that each time you can bring in a specific thing that's going on right now as a chance to talk about, rather than, you know, everything's a problem or everything's great. It's more, okay, what's going on now? What's happening? Like, I'm excited about this UN body of checking out greenwashing and the reason I'm excited about that, and I would tie it to the Salish Sea, is that we're seeing a lot of corporations now and a lot of people with their personal investments or their banking decisions to make, you know, to choose things that are more climate friendly, to say, I'm demanding a net zero thing from this bank, you know, my investments, I want them to be there. And tying that to what's going on in the Salish Sea, how does that benefit the Salish Sea? What's going on, you know, so that these things feel and are real to our everyday lives. That's a long answer, but that's
no, I will take that with me as I go into my long weekend and into next week and into the whole summer. Yeah, I was out on the water. I've been out on the water a couple times in the last few weeks and with scuba divers, and they've come up from a couple dives and seen sunflower sea stars and been very excited about it.
Wonderful. That's so great, because we were just seeing piceasters, but that's fantastic that you're seeing sunflowers. That's wonderful. Yeah. That's great. And celebrating that at the same time as we're working with concern about the issues that are there as well.
Exactly. Well, Ellen, this was very cool. I loved talking to you. Where can people find the book or anything else that you're doing?
Yeah, so Hope Matters, Why Changing the Way We Think is Critical to Solving the Environmental Crisis. It's a long title, but it's really available in any bookstore. If it's not there, you can do me a favor and ask them to order it, because that'll put more on the shelves, and or you can get it online at any of the book distributors are carrying it.
Excellent. And we'll put a link to that in the description for this show.
That's great. And then I myself am working on all kinds of solutions-oriented, hope-based things. And if you just Google my name, you can find out more about that.
That's Ellen Kelsey, ElinKelsey.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you so much. This was a total pleasure.
Yeah, you too, Justin. Thank you very much.
Take this moment to rate and review the show. Tell a friend about it. Make sure you're subscribed to the newsletter. Attend our event that's happening on September 15th. And watch for another episode next month. Thank you for listening.